Welcome to the Intertidal Talks podcast. I am Kendra, marine biologist and your host. This podcast is meant to teach, inform, and entertain you about all things marine science and conservation. If you are a marine scientist or advocate with a story to share, you can contact me at intertidaltalks@gmail.com. Want to join our marine science community? Join us at patreon.com/kendi_marinebio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Intertidal Talks podcast after a very long hiatus. But I'm super happy to be here with our guest today, Danielle, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Danielle. I work in the aquarium industry. I've been doing this for the past few years. I have worked in two different aquariums. Currently, I work at Georgia Aquarium.
That's really cool. What's your like education background and why did you want to be a marine scientist and or work in the field of the ocean?
Okay. I think that fascination started at a very young age. Essentially, when I was a small kid, like we would go on beach trips every summer, which I was very lucky to be able to do growing up. I have been in love with the ocean since being a small child. I grew up watching Steve Irwin. Like when he passed away, I was a very distraught six-year-old. I have loved the ocean from a very young age. And then when I was about 8 years old, very similar to you, my parents took me to SeaWorld and I fell in love with the orca show. Thought I was gonna be a marine mammal trainer up until middle school when I was 8 years old and then realized I don't really like cetaceans that much. So I fell in love with like the shark and ray side. I really love rays and skates and that kind of stuff. Wanted to explore that. I knew I wanted to be a marine biologist. I had picked out colleges at like 13 that I was gonna go to for school. For high school, I actually was in a early college program, which if people don't know what that is, you basically do your high school degree. And while you do that degree, you take college courses. And when you graduate with an associate's. So I actually graduated college the day before I graduated high school. So that was pretty interesting. One of my fun facts. Yeah. So I have an associate's degree in science. And then currently I'm in a bachelor's to master's program at Unity College. I am getting my bachelor's in marine biology and sustainable aquaculture with a minor in education that I finish in September. And then I'll be directly going into my master's after that. And that's in marine science with an emphasis on protection of marine predators. So it won't be like a thesis style master's. It'll be more of like hands-on experience. I don't like doing much research. I like being hands-on and teaching.
Oh, really cool. Yeah. It's cool. It's like an immediate program.
Yes.
And then, so how did you get working at aquariums? And I guess why, knowing that you have this history with like a marine park and that inspired you, why did you end up wanting to go into the aquariums and how, what's the process of getting a job in like the aquarium industry?
So where I'm from is actually, it's a little town in North Carolina called Concord. It's right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. So I was landlocked growing up. I've lived all over the place, but we kept coming back to Concord, North Carolina growing up. So when I graduated high school, I was working at Panera Bread. And I was like, oh my God, I have my associate's degree now. I want to do something in my field. And there was an aquarium that's in a mall. Keep this in mind. It's a very interesting concept. And I was like, I don't know what this is going to be like, but I'll put in an application. So I just applied, had my interview, and they offered me the position day of. They were like, we have customer experience, which is what they were looking for, because I had worked in fast food for the years previous to that. I wasn't expecting it. I was like, did I seriously just land a job at an aquarium? And I was just part-time. I was just like a guest experience host was their name for it. So you just run like the front of house positions, that kind of stuff, like selling tickets, working in the gift shop, that kind of stuff. And then I worked really, really hard. I tried to prove myself. And by my 90 days, I got promoted to a senior guest experience host. So I was full-time, got paid a few pennies more. And then I was able to do more education at that point. I was able to do like exhibit talks, give hourly talks, that kind of stuff. My favorite one was actually about a giant Pacific octopus. Her name was Fiona. I was able to do her talk at 11 a.m. every day that I worked. And then when I hit my year anniversary with the company, right after COVID hit, we had just opened back up. They offered me a management role. So I was a manager there. And then kind of just continued working my way through doing what I was doing. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it's difficult to start working in an aquarium because you can even come in as volunteers. It just depends on the facility you work at. You just got to prove yourself, work hard. I had to start from the bottom. I understand that's not, some people are not capable of doing that, but that's just kind of how it is in aquariums. It's really difficult to come in full-time positions unless you have previous experience.
And then you said now you work at the Georgia Aquarium?
Yes. So my previous aquarium was Sea Life Charlotte Concord. The Sea Life brand, they're underneath Merlin Entertainments. So if you know Little Gray and Little White, those are their beluga whales. they're the ones that have that in Keflavik Bay in Iceland. There's 10 of them in the United States. I worked at the one in North Carolina. After a year of working there, I realized I couldn't grow the way I was wanting to. So I put in some applications, didn't think anyone was gonna take a chance on me. I was like, I've been at this small aquarium that's only 26,000 square feet, and all the other aquariums I was applying to were a lot bigger. but Georgia Aquarium reached out. I got a job within guest services. So I'm a lead team specialist there. So I'm like a floor manager is the best way to explain it. I started working here. September.
Nice. What will you tell us a bit more about the Georgia Aquarium, like what that facility is, what makes them special and that kind of stuff?
So the Georgia Aquarium is a 501c nonprofit. If people don't know what that is, they are not a for-profit aquarium, which is what I'm normally used to. My previous aquarium was for-profit. Basically, they are the biggest aquarium in the Western Hemisphere. They have whale sharks, manta rays, beluga whales, octopi, sharks, big sharks. They got a little bit of everything. They have a very diverse collection within their exhibits. It's pretty amazing that I get to walk down the hall and learn and see these animals on an everyday basis that I'm there. I can't describe it. It's absolutely awesome.
It's really cool. And you said you work more like guest services. Like, what does that accompany? And like, what do you love about your job?
So basically I run all the floor positions. So, as a floor manager, like I allocate my employees out. We run all of the presentations. So our sea lion show, sometimes I do the dolphin show. Sometimes I run our 4D theater, which is currently doing a 4D experience on Octopus Blue Planet with David Attenborough. So that's pretty cool. Desk positions, helping out around the aquarium. Sometimes I get to interact with the guests, tell them where different species are, educate them a little bit about conservation and what we do here, that kind of stuff.
Very nice. And what or why do you like working at an aquarium, and why do you believe that aquariums are important?
I have fallen in love with working in the aquarium industry, especially with my previous place. I did not realize how many people have never been to our oceans. It's kind of shocking, especially since both aquariums I've worked at are landlocked, when you realize this person has never seen the beach. Like, this is their introduction into the ocean and conservation around it. And like, if I have the opportunity to show them and impact them with how important it is we are, that we should protect it and the species that they're seeing directly in front of them, it's really amazing thought. At my previous place, I did all of the, before COVID, I was one of their educators. So I taught all the classes, and then after COVID, I did all their content and development. in like these educational iPads for each of the exhibits. So it had the species name, pictures, that kind of stuff. So it was really awesome being able to go around the aquarium and like interact with guests and be like, this is an animal. This is where it came from. This is why they're important. And then go home and being able to tell other people that, it's just really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's like background. I worked at a zoo for 2 summers. I volunteered. But it was a 9-to-5 every, like, it was a lot. Like, I basically was working almost the full capacity as the zookeepers I was working with. Because a lot of these facilities do rely a lot on volunteer power. Even my zoo was not AZA accredited. It was a private owned zoo, which is a whole other discussion in and of itself. Pretty sure we have some big cats that were like from Joe Exotic but you know, I didn't know until after. I didn't know anything. I just needed volunteer experience. I'm not 100% sure, but I have guesses and I could guess which cats I think. But I didn't work with cats. I worked with birds, and then I worked in the education department and primates. That's what I did. And then I worked in my university wet lab taking care of fish, and it was like basically a mini aquarium, education outreach, research assistant, taking care of animals, all that kind of stuff in once. And like, it's a lot of work dealing, and I can only imagine like on a massive scale what like aquarists do with like a tank that has the capability to hold manta rays and whale sharks, because sometimes keeping hawkfish alive was annoying and like way more finicky. My dingy little lab, with like any storm and we had power outages, we'd like panic because we didn't have a generator. So very different. But growing up, like, went to aquariums all the time, sea life parks, all that kind of stuff. And my family traveled all the time to the beach. And so I don't even know if I'd think about people that didn't do that. Because a lot of times when you do it, you don't think other people don't. Like, I grew up, it was weird when someone told me they'd like never ridden on a horse. I was like, what do you mean? How have you never done that? And they're like, why have you? Like, that's so bizarre. It's the same with beaches and snorkeling, seeing the ocean, like why aquariums can be such an incredible learning resource, or even little labs at universities and like whatever. Sometimes just going to Petco can be cool and look at fish for people. So I definitely think that just the sense of wonder that can grow. I think most marine scientists that are just not from the beach can say that they became inspired because of aquariums or some sort of captive facility. And so on that, positive and negatives, it's kind of touched on things like finicky animals. What are positive and negatives that you see in either the whole industry, maybe in your specific location or locations you've been at or you've visited?
I do want to put this out. I do not speak for the facilities I worked for.
Work
there, and this is my experience. But there has been some really amazing things that I've seen happen, but there's also been some really negative things. A lot of the negatives, I get asked some really ridiculous questions. Like, some questions you'd be like, you've seriously been asked that? I am not kidding. I have been asked, like, is this a restaurant? Where can I buy these fish? Oh, can I fish in there? Things like that. I think the most crazy one was, how many batteries do you go through? And I was like, I'm sorry, what do you mean by batteries? And they were like, well, these fish, like, how many batteries do they take? They thought our entire aquarium was animatronic.
Oh my gosh, that's so weird.
So like, working the guest services side of the aquarium industry, you get some really odd interactions, and that, like, and you can have some really nasty people come into your aquarium as well. Like, just their day, you cannot do anything that is good enough for them. And I've just come to accept that, like, they're just gonna be unhappy with what they got. I can try and help, but if they don't like it, they don't like it. So that's like one of the biggest, like, if you're going to work in an aquarium industry, you need to make sure you are able to handle those situations, even as an aquarist, because at my previous facility at Sea Life, with it being so small, our aquarists were always on the floor. They would get stopped and get asked guest questions all the time as well. And sometimes it would be bad interactions. Sometimes it'd be really positive interactions. So like, working in this industry, you have to make sure you're always kind of on top of it. I went from an aquarium that the capacity, like the highest I had seen in a day was 3,000 people, to an aquarium that has seen 17,000 people in a day. Over the weekend, I think we saw 2 weekends ago, it was like almost 15,000 in a day. It was pretty insane. So like being able to handle that amount of people, as well as like running all this stuff properly, that can be a little overwhelming. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a negative, but if you don't know how to handle the two things, it can become a negative. The biggest positive I have found with the aquarium industry is just how many different people you get to meet. I have met such a spectrum of people that I get, that I wouldn't normally get to interact with anywhere else I think I would have worked at. And it's really nice being able to like talk to these demographics and help educate them, help teach them about conservation and like what they can do to help, stuff like that. It's quite enjoyable. Then as for like the animal side, like positive and negatives, of course, in aquarium industries, you're gonna have animals that complete their life cycle. It's gonna happen. And that becomes a big negative, especially when it's such a popular animal and people know it by name, they know it, they come in to look for it. When you have those situations happen, it's really hard to explain to guests, like that animal was not gonna live forever. It soon was going to complete their life cycle, whether it was by natural causes or not, it was gonna happen. And it's, that can be really difficult because some people, like they'll automatically accuse you of doing something wrong, even though that might not be the case. For instance, my previous place, our octopus passed away from a process called senescence. Most people are not going to know what that is. And trying to explain that on a guest level can be really difficult to do because they're just automatically going to accuse you of doing something wrong, even though that's not the case. Once they lay eggs, they're going to pass away within a few months of it, similar to Black Widow spiders. But it is what it is. And I mean, but the fact that I'm able to put that information out there and take away that disinformation is really nice as well. But it can be a pro and a con.
Yeah, for sure. And then, so I taught, like right before I said I worked at a non-accredited facility, and you work for an accredited facility. So what, I don't think people realize that there are differences. I've talked about on my Instagram, accredited versus non-accredited, and people saying what they prefer when they're vetting a facility, because I don't really promote boycotts of anywhere, but I obviously don't support a lot of facilities. I prefer facilities that don't have cetaceans unless it's a rescue, or maybe old research animals that can't be released. Or I don't like migrating species. So I personally don't like whale sharks and manta rays in captivity due to just what that means for them and their capabilities. But I also believe there are several species that can be taken care of very well and do incredible in a captive facility. But I just don't promote boycotts. Whatever people are most comfortable with, that is what I'm all about. But Ed's like teaching each other, because sometimes like I may prefer something that someone doesn't. I may know how to check for like research, or like how you can tell a facility does research. So like, what is AZA accreditation? And then what does it mean when a facility is non-accredited?
So I have actually been through an accreditation, and both aquariums I've worked at have been accredited. So AZA is the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. If you are accredited through them, it's a very long and lengthy process. It takes, I believe, my old place, we took almost a year from like filing the application to when they came to visit and we got done. It's a very lengthy process. And if aquariums and zoos go through this process, that means every single piece of their facility is checked, from drills that have happened to education to employee morale, pay, every little thing that goes into that aquarium is checked through AZA. So it basically weans out any discrimination, anything that could be going wrong. Like if your facility is AZA accredited, you know they are taking the best possible care of their species that they have on site, as well as making sure that even their employees are doing great, that they have great programming and education. For instance, with Georgia Aquarium, like a lot of people, like there's a common misconception that like they just gotten all of their animals from the wild, but like when you're AZA accredited, as well as like a nonprofit, like Georgia Aquarium, you are able to get animals allocated to you by the government or other AZA accredited facilities. So if they're rescues or if they have been, for instance, a lot of animals get smuggled across the border. If they get smuggled and they're found, they'll have to come to a facility like us that can take proper care of them until they figure out what to do with them. So it's pretty interesting, like, when you go to facilities that are not AZA accredited, because it doesn't mean that it's all going to be, it's not going to be like Tiger King or it's like a roadside zoo. If you're not an AZA accredited facility, like, does not mean they're doing harm to their animals.
Doesn't mean they're horrible.
However, that standard that is put on them tells you, oh, they are for sure doing this, because you have to get reaccredited every 5 years. And when you do that reaccreditation, they look at everything from the last time they did it to when you're currently doing it. So when I went through the AZA process at my old aquarium, our aquarists were the ones and our curator were the ones that put in the initial application. And then being on the management team, we had to deep clean the entire facility. We had to make sure there was no like rust spots, that tanks were up to date, that we had an actual like collection plan, like that all of our education was listed and organized. We had to make sure we had fire drills listed and organized that we had done in the last 5 years. Like, and then with being on the AZA reaccreditation, a few of the employees plus myself, we were on the board of educators, which sounds really fancy, but we basically were just taught about everything that AZA could be. And we were put in a conference room with inspectors, and they asked us like questions like, how are you treated here? Do you know about the animal welfare program? How do you answer these questions if an animal completes their life cycle? That kind of stuff. So it was really interesting getting that experience and seeing how in depth they actually go, because it makes you appreciate it a little more when you go to an accredited facility. You're like, they put a lot of work to get that accreditation, so they must be taking proper care of their animals.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a non-accredited facility, and I've been through accredited ones, like behind the scenes, and there is a stark difference, I will say. And not always, there are a lot of non-accredited facilities that can't afford the process, and that's why they aren't AZA accredited. So again, it's not an immediate no-go. And I think saying AZA accredited is very good as like a good standard. Again, if you don't like captive cetaceans, like SeaWorld is AZA accredited.
Yes.
So if you, that doesn't always mean that it's going to fit all of your personal ethics kind of a thing. But for like getting down to the nitty gritties, for sure. Cause the facility I was at just didn't have it. I don't know why. I could take guesses, but I'm not going to. But like I went through Odyssey Aquarium, which is another aquarium in Arizona. I've been through Van Aqua here and the Vancouver Aquarium. And then even like labs that I've been through that just keep fish, like our own lab, very just different in terms of cleanliness. I went through Odyssey and Van Aqua, and like I would eat off the tables in some of those places, like that where they're doing their food prep. I would not do that at the zoo I was at. I did food prep, and like it's good, but it's just not the same rigorous because no one's coming in and really checking. Like you're not. It's just very different. And I think I said that when I went through Odyssey, I was like, this is so clean. Like we're clean, but this is insanely clean. Like, oh my goodness. And it was different. Like it's on an outdoor zoo where there's mud on the floor and it's hard to keep track because, you know, you're going to mop in the morning, but at the end of the day, it's going to be insanely muddy again. I would mop at the end of the day in the like medical area. And it was just like, what's the point? Tomorrow morning, everyone's going to come in here and grab the medicine. And it's just going to be muddy and dirty again. And then I'm going to have to hang new fly traps and I'm going to have to mop again. And then like all that kind of stuff. Whereas I think the first thing I noticed at like Odyssey was the bleach baths you do with your feet when you're going into new rooms. And then I came back the next summer to my zoo again, and they had implemented that in a couple different areas, not the whole zoo, like you would expect at a lot of AZA accredited facilities that you'll see that. And then like when I went through Van Aqua, we saw them and I was like, put your feet in those to my husband. Cause I was like, that's to clean like the bottom of your shoes and to make sure like things are staying sterile and clean. that kind of stuff. But there are definitely still non-accredited zoos that do that because it's just good. They just can't afford the accreditation process because it's rigorous and it can be quite expensive. I don't know the price, but just from other people I know that have worked at other zoos that have gone through the process or that are accredited, they say like that's pricey and some places just can't do it with what with where they're at now.
Yeah, with my previous facility, obviously they weren't a nonprofit, so the money we got was from the customers we got through the door. But since we were like a corporate aquarium, since we had multiple worldwide, there was a way that we could get extra money if we needed it. But
I
the
think there's
amount of
one in Arizona.
there is one in Arizona. There's
Yeah.
a time.
It's by a Lego store.
Yes, Merlin Entertainment owns Lego, Madame Tussauds, Sea Life, Shrek, Peppa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little diverse over there. But yeah, with Sea Life, it cost so much money because there were so many things we had to get up to date that they, because with AZA, once you start the process, as long as you are, from my understanding, as long as you are the majority, like completed and passable, there'll be a few things that they'll be like, you will not pass this until you fix it. So like there are chances you're still given. So like with my old aquarium, like we had to replace like HVAC units, and we had to replace like entire exhibits and things like that, or like holding pools for quarantine animals, like things, stuff like that had to be replaced. When you think about it, it adds up very, very quickly, because I think the HVAC unit was like
Yeah, so
$100,000.
it's a costly process
It's a very
for
costly
great
process.
cause, for like great
Oh yes,
reason, but it's costly.
fantastic reasoning, but because that accreditation puts you on top in like other people's eyes, especially a lot of people who go to aquariums like I do. I am a very avid aquaria person. Anytime I go on a trip, I try to visit at least some sort of facility while I'm there. So it's very intense process. I couldn't tell you how many sleepless nights and how many days I worked in a row to make sure we would get through that process.
Yeah, that's yeah. I just think that's important to talk about. Especially like a big aquarium, Georgia Aquarium is very well known. I'd say it's on the same stand as like Monterey Bay Aquarium, like iconic big aquariums.
Still haven't visited there yet. It's on my list.
Haven't either. I want to do a trip that's like basically just to go see the Monterey Bay Aquarium because they have
Yeah,
tinafores and that's all they care about. It's like the only thing I care about. So
That's
I.
okay. A friend of mine who went, she said, you need to take a week. She's like, I know you. You need to take an entire week to see everything.
Yeah, it looks incredible. And then, what are ambassador animals and what is the importance? I think a lot of people that work in the field will say this is an ambassador animal. They do this and that. Like, I know there's a trainer on Instagram that I don't know if say popular is the word, but like, I think if you're in the zoo field, you know about some of like the bigger trainers. And she's always talking about the whales were ambassador animals, which I would argue, but that's beside the point. but in general, a lot of these animals are considered ambassadors. And like, whether it's the penguin, the tuna, your little reef fish, the corals, they're ambassadors. And like, what does that mean? Because I think of like your sand cloud ambassador. It's like, what's an animal ambassador?
I was a sand cloud ambassador. I
Hey.
still run from like 2016 to like 2018.
Think people
So
think about like what it means in like the marketing term, but it's very different when you're not selling stuff.
it is very, very different. I guess I'll start with Sea Life and the way their ambassador program, and then how it differs from Georgia Aquarium. So with Sea Life, majority of our animals came from other accredited places or accredited vendors that had to go through like a strenuous like process to make sure they were not like farmed fish, stolen fish, that kind of stuff. Like it was a very strenuous process for them, for the animals that we did have. And we had a reptile area that were our ambassador animals, and we would use them to bring on the floor to like talk about conservation, that kind of stuff. a few of our rays were ambassador animals, like this is what aquarium they came from, this is what project we'll be using them for, that kind of stuff. Georgia Aquarium's ambassador animals are a lot different than my previous place, because we just had the mostly just our reptile area that was ambassador animals that we ended up dismantling when COVID hit, because our curator, she was like, what is their value for life sitting up here for not knowing how long we'll be able to, until we'll be able to bring them out on the floor again and have them interact with people like they're used to. So they actually went to other accredited facilities where they were going to be taken care of and treated well and had the capabilities of caring for them more than we could, because we were just focused on the aquarium side. But with Georgia Aquarium, their ambassador animals, the whale shark is an ambassador animal technically because it was a rescue from Indonesia. The whale sharks that we have, I cannot tell you if it's the two males we currently have, but I know that they were supposed to be used in the fishing industry for meat. They were actually saved instead and then were gifted to us, from my understanding. So those are ambassador animals to talk about their species, how important it is to talk about the shark fin trade and how these animals as well are killed in the shark fin trade and used for meat when they don't technically have to be, that kind of stuff. Our Sharks Predator of the Deep exhibit, even though the sharks were wild caught when they were babies, they actually had a license to do it. They got approval to do it. I believe they were at Moat before they came to us. So they are used for research purposes. So they're ambassador species as well to talk about tiger sharks, sand tiger sharks, and the importance behind them and why we should protect them. My favorite ambassador species is our zebra sharks. Since we are AZA accredited, we are doing, we have someone, she's our nutritionist. She also does a lot of shark research. She is amazing. Her name is Dr. Lisa Hoops. She is doing a project, I believe, with Seattle Aquarium, where they take mating pairs of zebra sharks. And essentially what they do is once they get those mating pairs and they lay eggs, they take those eggs, they hold onto them, they preserve them, and then they get released, hopefully, in Indonesia to bring back up their population there. So if the project kicks off, their hopes would be, if we can do it with zebra sharks, we can do it with rays, and we can do it with our bigger sharks. Because obviously they're not replenishing their populations as quickly as they're being taken out of the ocean. So if we are capable of using aquariums and these animals to show that for people to fund this research and learn about the conservation and be able to continue doing programs like this, those animals come quite in handy to do that. Because otherwise, I mean, with Georgia Aquarium, most of the animals we have would be dead if we weren't a facility that could take them, because they were either being smuggled or allocated to us by the government, or we're going to be killed in some sort of fishing trade, an arrangement of things where our animals have come from.
So essentially, ambassador animals are animals with the purpose of educating either about the species, conservation, and or research.
Yes.
Perfect. So, no, you're good. I just like to like sum it all up.
You're good.
And that was like, and that was my big issue with certain people claiming certain facilities do with whales as ambassador animals. This is my personal opinion. We're going to know. Yes. Because when it comes to teaching about killer whales, a lot of facilities will avoid talking about wild populations and conservation issues. A big one is, and I mean by naming it specifically. So my qualm with SeaWorld is they very faintly, for literally like 1 second, say, whales need help in the wild. And they have a quiz question before their show that talks about how some whales are threatened, like the southern residents. But there isn't much during the show that is truly saying why this population is endangered and what the audience can do. In the other terms, they talk about the research that SeaWorld has done, which again, awesome. I'm willing to give credit to any facility where credit is due. SeaWorld does help with research. They do help with conservation as well. They have one of the biggest rescue, I think, going on in the United States, in California and Florida. And I probably Texas, I think they have their rescue in Texas. I forget about SeaWorld Texas sometimes, which is funny because I've been there and I've never been to SeaWorld Florida, but there is a SeaWorld in Texas. There's also rescue things in Texas. Texas has the ocean. Just in case people don't know that, because I think people forget that part of Texas is by the ocean. Stuff like that. SeaWorld does good things, but my qualm is when they don't talk about the Southern residents specifically because they need help.
Yes.
Just it to is, note.
Oh yeah, no, and I think that's completely fair. Especially like when a facility tries to say they're an ambassador animal and that's not the case, I kind of get a little frustrated because it ruins it for other aquariums that actually have ambassador animals and that are trying to use them for conservation education. With Georgia Aquarium, like they're really good about, even with our presentations, because most of the animals we use in that are rescues, especially the sea lion one. That's my favorite one. My favorite part about that is guests think, oh, it's going to be a show. It's not a show. It's a presentation. It's our trainers showing sea lions doing behaviors that they've been taught while they're in our care. You learn about the difference between seals and sea lions. You learn about the importance of sea lions. You learn about what each of their body parts do. You learn their background stories. My favorite sea lion, his name is Neptune. He was rescued with in his head that he lives with to this day. Because they're not removable, but like being able to show that to guests and like being able to talk about it and educate them and have them see it right in front of their eyes, it's really amazing. Because I have like families walk out of there and they're like, well, what can I do? Like, what can I do to help? Like, is there something I can donate to? Like, what can I learn more about? And it's really awesome that I get to work at a facility that has all these different research projects they do, different ways you can help out, educational packets you can look at online from like kindergarten to 12th grade. It's just, it's really cool. And I get a little angry when other facilities try to do the same thing when it's not for the right purposes.
Yeah. Well, and I think at Vancouver Aquarium, they have a lot of rescued pinnipeds. And then there are some pinnipeds that are just retired from research with UBC. But a lot of their animals are rescued, and I want to say most of them are from like bullet wounds or boat strikes, which is insane. And a lot of them are like blind or just don't even have like an eye because they were shot in the head. Like, it's super sad, but it's good to know that they can live somewhere, because the reality is a lot of people don't even like rescue animals, but if there weren't facilities that could rescue, the animals would be euthanized. And that's an issue in a lot of places. I think over the summer, the issue with Toa, the little orca calf that was stranded in New Zealand, there's no rescue facility in New Zealand, mostly because they're just, a rescue facility costs a lot of money to keep up if they were going to be able to rehabilitate and then release an animal. So not criticizing New Zealand for not having one, but because they don't, there is the consequence of if a cetacean strands and they aren't able to rescue it, it's either you have a willing facility that will deal with shipping that animal essentially to them to then deal with if it's possible, or it's euthanization. Yeah. And Toa got sick, but euthanization was considered, and honestly, that was the only option. Unless a facility that could handle a killer whale, which is a lot of work. That is not something like, and there's not many that can even import anymore. Euthanization was the option. He was so little, and it was just going to be so hard to find his pod. And like, that can be the importance of having a facility that has a robust rescue facility. And the states are very lucky to have many on every coastline. There's facilities in New York that do with sea turtle rescues. There's stuff in Seattle. Here in BC, we have, I think, the only pinniped rescue, which is the Marine Mammal Rescue and Vancouver Aquarium. Yeah. So there's not a lot even here in Canada, especially for cetaceans, because there's a lot of, like, Marineland Canada is that. And then Vancouver Aquarium can't do cetaceans due to current laws. Not that there's a ton of room. So getting some, like, if a cetacean stranded, you'd have to figure something out with getting it shipped down to a facility in the States, which has happened. That has happened. But stuff like that, like, those are very important, because, and then it's cool, they can become ambassadors and then teach. And it's better than a wild caught animal. In some circumstances, for certain animals, breeding can be difficult, because a lot of times, like in captivity, the breeding pool has been very limited.
Yeah.
So getting a rescue animal can be very good to have a new animal to continue teaching people.
Yeah, no. I don't know. It's been very interesting, like, learning about this side of the aquarium industry, like, in the few years I've been in it, because you don't realize how important it is until you have an animal come in that you see and you're like, well, where would they have gone otherwise? They wouldn't have. They
like, yeah, it's and it's
tragic, and but
it is. Well, and it's hard because I always can say, like, I understand why people don't like things for all kinds of animals. Like, I objectively can say, yeah, I get why. Just sometimes the essence of captivity can be an issue, because a lot of times people then, some people can walk away with just thinking they can keep anything in a tank, anything in a cage. And that's how the illegal pet trade starts, is because humans are very, can be very toxic and see themselves as super or better than other creatures, when most aquariums and zoos, or a lot of them, are, it's a very respectful manner and not a superiority issue, but in a hope to bring the ocean or bring the forest or whatever it is to other people to learn about. Because so often we learn best by literally seeing something, not on a screen, but like in front of you with a little thing of glass, looking at a tuna and understanding, oh my gosh, that's a tuna.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a tuna.
Seriously though, like it's quite awesome, especially because a lot of people are like, oh, well, what, can I have this fish at my house? And like being able to be there and like be the sound of reason, it's kind of nice too, because you can be like, and I'm not trying to tell you no, but this is why you shouldn't have it. This is how hard they are to take care of. The industries that sell this particular species probably are not the most reliable, the most,
yeah,
I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but the most credible places to receive those animals from. So it's really ethical. Nice being able to deter people from doing that, as well as teaching them.
Yeah, I mean, I had an octopus in my lab, and I was under a permit. I was allowed to go and catch fish in Hawaii under said permit. Yes. People cannot just go out and collect in the aquarium trade anywhere. Like, don't just do that. Don't think you can go catch a fish and put it in your house. We had an octopus, and I would post about her because she was super cool, and she was meant to kind of like be for the invertebrate zoology class, and then just to have for education outreach in our lab. And I would just post about her because she's cool, and I fed her live crabs, and it was fun to watch her attack. And people would always be like, how can I get one? Where'd you get one? I want one as a pet. And I was like, oh, I would kind of tell people, no, I do not recommend it. Like, it's a ton of work to take care of an octopus, especially this one, this big. I know there are smaller ones that can be kept. But even then, like, if you watch anything with like the aquarium trade, it's a very skilled, you have to be very skilled in keeping tanks to do an octopus for so many reasons. Especially. And then especially an octopus, like literally keeping certain fish alive is a challenge. Like, and so it was one of those things. I'm like, oh, I'm like posting about it, and I know that like I have the capability to do this, but like, is me even sharing, like, is that a bad thing? And that it's encouraging people, and you see it firsthand where a lot of people just saw how cool an octopus was, but there are so many people that just see, I want that, I want to exploit that, and all that kind of thing, those type of things. And I feel like that was like a challenge. So I can only imagine like working in an aquarium and someone being like, I want one. Can I have a giant Pacific octopus in my house? Like,
literally,
no,
I can.
You shouldn't. Maybe you can, but that doesn't mean you should.
I have to explain like how intelligent the species is, how easily it escapes.
I feel like it is the one at the Seattle Aquarium just like coming over and just on the floor, and the aquarist like, okay,
yeah,
I guess back up.
Like, there was a story a few years ago, I forget what aquarium it was at, but the octopus was so smart that it was unlocking its exhibit, going to the exhibit next door, eating a fish, coming back and relocking exhibit. Like, octopuses,
they're so smart
animals, and it's like, no, it does not want to live in your living room.
That's one. It's like, it's just hard.
Yes. Yeah. And I just, one of like, going back to like something earlier you asked, one of the negatives of working in the aquarium industry is everyone just assumes like this super easy job to do, that you don't need much information behind it, and that these people, they're just doing it. And it's like, no, that's not the case. Like, from trainers to aquarists, these people have to have multiple internships, multiple degrees, certifications. With their trainers, most of them have psychology degrees, and then had to have at least three internships before they were even considered interviews. So it's like, I wish people would realize you can't just take this animal and have it. You need to have the knowledge about it, the time to take care of it, all of that stuff. It's
Yeah,
just.
when keeping an aquarium or a tank, whichever, that's a lot of work. I was thrown into it with absolutely no experience working in my lab. I had experience working with birds, primates, and like some snakes and reptiles with my volunteering position at the zoo. But it's a lot of work. You don't just set up a tank and leave it. Like, you check the parameters. We are supposed to do it weekly, keep a log of it. Obviously, you know that with your pets, a lot of people don't, but at a lot of facilities, you keep a log of who you're feeding, what you're feeding them, if there's medication in it, what's their water quality at the time, and you manage that all in a log, just in case something goes wrong, you can look back and be like, oh, maybe there was like a spike in like nitrate or whatever the nitrates last week, and that may have caused like maybe some funky attitude going on this week, like that kind of stuff. And that's. I learned it on the go, but it's like really difficult. And you have to do that every day. And like sitting, like working at an aquarium is not just sitting around kind of a thing. There's a lot of things that go into maintaining this habitat for these animals.
Yes,
And
very much.
I think regardless of opinion of on this stance of captivity, whether you're all against, all for, trainers and aquarists are not the ones that deserve the fire for
No,
it. Even
not at
that's why I
all.
always say, I'm like, don't attack a trainer. Like, the issue is almost always the corporation behind it, where the money is, not at the trainers and not at the people who are working and are truly passionate.
'Cause like some people just automatically want to assume, especially when it comes to cetaceans, they want to be like, well, the trainers are keeping them here. They're not feeding them. They're not taking care of them. And that may be the case with some facilities, but at least with facilities I've been to and I've worked at, those trainers, that is essentially their kids. Like, they love them. They would do anything for those animals. Even when it comes to the sharks, like, it's, you can't just blame them. It's not them.
Yeah.
They're doing their job. They're there to take care of that animal.
Yeah. I think I see the captivity debate as very nuanced and complicated. And like I said earlier, I don't take a firm stance like boycotting everything or promoting everything. I think it's like a case by case basis. And I think a lot of people should think about it that way. But again, when people outright don't support captivity, while I don't agree with it, I can understand it like from that objective point. And same, like, that's just how I see it. And so I think people should know that whatever you support, it's okay. And at least for me, there is space for you on any of my platforms, whether you're all for captivity or all against it. I have people on both ranges that engage with my content and have even been on the podcast. And like, I've talked about captivity issues before, both with sharks and rays and with cetaceans. It's all welcome. I like discourse, different opinions. And also, whether or not like I even would agree with something, I think it's important people know about these jobs. I have nothing against working in an aquarium, but I still think people should know what it takes, what it means, and that it's an option, because it's a very real and awesome option for people in this field that may be landlocked, especially landlocked people who want to be marine scientists or work with ocean animals, but can't live in California, Oregon, or any other coastal place you think of for marine biology. And yes, Texas, that is a marine biology place.
There's a beautiful aquarium there. Texas State Aquarium is absolutely gorgeous.
And they have a great university for marine science. Just saying, there's a great university down there for people. But yeah, I think that was all the questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add, where people can follow you, find you, support you?
I think the only other thing I would like to add is I really love doing conservation education. I'm all about making connections and talking to different people, especially with different opinions than me. I love hearing about other people's opinions because it creates a conversation, because if we all stay in the same mindset, how are you going to learn any different? So like being able to talk to people that do open water research versus people that are aquarists or do aquarium research, it's really great to have those conversations. So if anybody would be interested in talking to me about working in the aquarium industry, please reach out. I have a lot of friends that do multiple different things, whereas I work the guest facing side. I like doing marine science education, conservation, outreach, that kind of stuff. Not really big hands-on with the animals. Done a few things here and there, but not anything like most people in the marine science industry or marine biology would do.
Still important.
It's still very important. I'm able to connect with a lot of people because of it. As for my social medias and everything, all of it should just be my first and last name, which is just Danielle.Dillman or Danielle_Dillman. I did just come out with a advocate apparel. I designed some really awesome clothes that will go to different species. I have one with a stingray on it, one with the great white shark, one with a scuba diver, that kind of stuff. You can see it all on my Instagram and my bio, or my TikTok and my bio, whichever one you prefer.
Yeah, and I will link everything in the description for this podcast episode. I'll also include a link to the Georgia Aquarium website so people can explore that if they would like. Look at what exhibits they have, anything else, information they have on their website. But yeah, and then everything she mentioned, her social media channels and the merch store will also be linked below for anyone who is interested.
Yes, and if anyone is interested in working part-time, Everywhere is currently hiring because we were all short-staffed. I know the aquarium would love to have on some more passionate people that are wanting to do marine science. We have a wonderful guest programs department where you would actually be in the galleries educating guests, and it's part-time. It's a great way to start out. If people are interested in the Atlanta area, I would love to connect with you.
Networking via podcast. We love it. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you wanting to do this.
Of course. Thank you for reaching out. And yeah, like if anyone else wants to talk about their research, their position, whatnot, you can always email me at intertitaltalks@gmail.com. And I will get back to you about it. And we can discuss doing an episode because I like talking to people from all around. We've talked to high schoolers about their journey. We've talked to people for the aquarium, shark divers, all that kind of stuff. Like anything and everything, everyone's story is important. So thank you.